First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
This is WJCT News 89.9 in Jacksonville.
Opinions expressed on the Friday Media Roundtable are those of our panelists and do not necessarily reflect the views of WJCT News.
Police confront neo-Nazis on a local overpass as Jacksonville rallies against hate speech. City Council is resisting drawing new political maps to comply with the Voting Rights Act. And it's almost time for all of you to elect a new sheriff. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We are live from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable, and you can join us. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we've got a preview of one of the biggest parties and most fun events of the year, tomorrow's Porch Fest in historic Springfield. That's later this hour. But first this morning, it's Friday, and here to round up all the week's news, we're pleased to welcome Dan Scanlon of WJCT News. Good morning.
Good morning.
Blogger and regular contributor, Fred Matthews. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm live.
That's right. Here you are in studio with us. First time I've seen your face in years since the pandemic. It's good to have you. Claire Heddles of Jacksonville Today, also in studio. Hi, Claire.
Hi, guys. Great to be with you all.
And joining us on the phone, Ben Becker of Action News Jax. Hey, Ben.
Melissa, happy belated Halloween.
Yeah, that's right. And some of the stories we're going to cover are still a little scary, but I urge everyone to keep listening as we break down the biggest news of the week with our fabulous foursome. Let's begin with our top story. Did you see this? According to JSO, police confronted a small group of men several days back hanging anti-Semitic banners on an I-10 overpass. The police report obtained by WJCT News for the first time publicly identifies the group responsible. National Socialists of Florida, or NatSoch Florida, or NSF, they are an extremist group with a growing presence in Jacksonville. Of course, you likely followed the anti-Semitic banners across a couple of highways, and they also projected anti-Semitic messages during the Florida-Georgia weekend on TIAA Bank Field and on a downtown high-rise, upsetting so many people across the city. So last night, hundreds of people turned out for a downtown vigil to stand against this hate speech. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look at all of this, and we want your calls, 549-2937. Join the conversation. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. You obtained JSO's police report as they confronted these neo-Nazis hanging this hateful banner over I-10. What does the report say?
Well, the report indicates that there was some complaints and that a police officer and a trooper, highway patrol trooper, showed up at the overpass there, Chafee Road, and saw eight or nine guys hanging two banners, one of which actually had a hammer and sickle of the old Soviet Union on it with the Jewish Star of David, and approached deferentially, asked them what they were doing. There was a guy from California who identified himself as the top anti-Semite blogger in California, and he was flying a drone. The drone had to get down because you can't fly a drone over an occupied highway. And as far as this report seems to indicate, within a few minutes, the guys left, and they parked in a local supermarket parking lot, and they left. But obviously you got, last Friday, at least one reader image of those two banners hung out there. Apparently there were similar banners on Arlington Expressway coming into downtown, and there also was the projections on the scoreboard on the Gator Bowl Boulevard side, on the old Independent Life, not Independent Life, the condo building down near the DuPont Center. And apparently the projector may have been actually turned on to the Wells Fargo building, we're hearing, before they picked the top floor. And then the projection on the scoreboard, the back of the scoreboard at TIAA Bank Field, may have also been shown on one of the overpasses nearby. And Kanye was right, was the projection shown downtown. I will not repeat the stuff that was shown on the actual written banners, their offensive And certainly we heard a lot of that last night at the One Jack's Jewish Federation candlelight ceremony outside of City Hall.
It was encouraging to see hundreds of people turned out for that, at least one elected official and several candidates, Fred Matthews, to stand against this hate speech, because what people may not realize is that North Florida is a hotbed of extremist and hate groups.
Well, it was quite gratifying to see that. The fortunate or unfortunate part about this is that I think it was noted by one of the officers is that a lot of the stuff is still covered by the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're covered by it. As offensive as it may be to folks like me who forever travel down I-75 right at the intersection to go to I-4. Remember that huge Confederate flag that flies there?
I think it's still there.
The family decided to keep it after the father passed away. This is the America that we live in, and it's unfortunate. Now, the key thing here is that for law enforcement authorities, because this kind of hacking into electronic signs in strategic areas around the city could have just as easily been, shall I say it, could have just as easily been explosives set at key points around the city. And the unfortunate part about these groups, as we've now come to find out, is that they're not beyond this to make their point. And our hope is that the law enforcement authorities will stay on top of this, because it's more involved here than just free speech and I don't like you. Because, you know, we get to the question that I would ask any of them all the time for those who are listening. Okay, so you don't like this group. What do you want to do with the Jewish population? You want to send them back? Send them back where? You're going to take them? What is it that you want to be done aside from the solution that was already done some now 70, 80 years ago? And that's the question. But law enforcement authorities have to stay on top of this, because there's more going on with these groups than what we see here with this simple hacking of electronic signs.
It's our question to callers if you're just tuning into our Friday roundtable. How concerned are you about this area being a hotbed of extremist and hate groups? Give us a call, 549-2937, to join the conversation. Claire Heddles, Jax Today, you've been reporting on these hate groups. What have you learned?
I think this week one of the most striking things and what we've heard from people in the community is the feeling that JSO law enforcement is not taking forceful action. Though they can't necessarily prosecute free speech, reading the police report and hearing the way that they treated the people hanging the posters, describing them as polite, the police officers apologizing for taking their time, I think there's many people in this community that have not had JSO treat them that way in their interactions with JSO and feeling like these white supremacists are getting preferential treatment to other people in the community, even if the signs themselves are not a crime or are protected speech. And then I think it is part of a feeling of a larger structure of white supremacy that is upheld in this city that these signs are part of and not seeing as forceful of reaction to hate speech across the city.
What about that, Ben Becker? The police report does detail, as Claire said, that the officers actually apologized to the neo-Nazis for taking up so much of their time.
That's correct. I'm reading it right here. It says, quote, "I thank the group for their cooperation and apologize for taking up so much of their time." So that kind of speaks for itself, right? And it's interesting to note, because one of the guys that was apologized to by a JSO officer, as mentioned before by Dan, calls himself the most famous anti-Semite in America on the internet. And that's who received an apology. I thought it's also interesting that this person who calls himself the most famous anti-Semite on the internet in America was recently in Poland in September and displayed hate speech and was arrested there. So in Poland, you're arrested for hate speech, but in Jacksonville, you're apologized to by law enforcement. So let that sit for a second and process that.
Thanks for adding that detail. And do we know why the man who calls himself this was decided to come all the way to Jacksonville to take part in this hateful rash of messages during a high-profile tourism weekend?
Well, the police report indicates that he was proud of the Polish arrest, and that he also had been to one of the, I think, POW camps, one of the concentration camps as well. So he obviously volunteered that, and obviously being, as he thinks, a blogger of note, either got invited or heard about Mr. Nunes and his group here and decided to take part in this on the big Georgia-Florida weekend, where he knew that he would get coverage, where he knew his blogs would get a lot of coverage because everybody was here. Same as they projected it as people were leaving TIA Bank Field at the end of the game, those projections were visible by thousands of people. In fact, I think it's quite daring that anybody would take the time to set up a projector, and they'd have to be there for some period of time doing that, and nobody maybe got ticked at them and assaulted them.
Jim in Riverside emails the show and says, I was at the Unity rally last night downtown. One Jacks did a great job. Unfortunately, political leadership was mostly absent. Other than Councilmember Matt Carlucci, I did not see any elected officials. I believe Councilman Gaffney was also there, along with a number of candidates running for office, Fred.
Yeah.
But that said, should elected officials be more vocally standing against this horrible, hateful messaging?
Well, it depends upon your constituency. And that's where we are right now. Your constituency kind of dictates for many of the candidates that are running. Even if you look at the mayoral candidates that are coming up here shortly, they will be looking at you shortly, and the different city council districts. It just depends upon what constituency you represent and whether or not your feeling about an issue moves you to be there.
So denouncing Nazis is not politically popular among some people in this area is what I hear you saying.
That's correct. It's a sad thing to say, but there's a different attitude, and I don't pretend to project it if each side of town, but there's a different attitude about these things from the north side to downtown, to Mandarin, to Middleburg, to Baldwin, at the beaches. We have different attitudes about this in eastern Arlington. There are different attitudes about this sort of thing, and depending upon who you represent, you will not get a councilman to speak up or be seen at this. You've already had a couple of them on your show who simply are not going to, they're not in favor of taking down Confederate monuments.
But, you know, I have to say, what's interesting is that a number of elected officials denounce the anti-Semitic hate speech publicly, but they won't take a position on taking down the Confederate monuments, which are monuments to white supremacy. So that is remarkable. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
But if I may, it's our Friday roundtable. Lots of calls, 549-2937. As we speak with Fred Matthews, Dan Scanlon, Ben Becker, Claire Heddles, and me. And you can watch us. Hey, we got a brand new studio that we're very excited about. It's our big glow up. You can watch the live video stream right now, too, on Facebook and YouTube. 549-2937, Charles on the West Side. Hi, Charles. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, guys. You know, this is terrible. First, you know, this is a parallel with the 30s Germany, you know, the rise of Nazism, and we're pretty doggone close. You know, first, the anti-Semitic messages, and then, you know, God forbid they should get a hold of the Democratic voting rolls, and these nuts will start coming after everybody, you know? Like that famous saying, first they came after the, you know, the teachers and I did nothing, and then next they came after me and nobody said anything. You know, I misquoted it, but you get the drift.
I get your drift, Charles.
This is terrible. I see America is on the precipice here.
I appreciate your call.
Believe this stuff.
I appreciate your call, Charles. And let me be clear, there are plenty of Republicans denouncing this hate, this rise of hate. That said, Claire Heddles, I do think it's fair to say there is a deep concern about white nationalism, Christian white nationalism, political extremism, which was the whole purpose of the rally One Jacks held last night. And they've brought speakers into this community to try to educate the public about this growing extremism, because it can tip over into violence. It can tip over into further destabilizing our political system.
Right. And you had some guests on your show earlier this week talking about the rally that we're discussing. You know, this is not an isolated incident. This is part of a larger political climate. And you can't disconnect anti-Semitic hate speech from the larger structure of white supremacy and the upholding of Confederate monuments in this city. To have an elected leader denounce speech but vote to keep Confederate
monuments up, right?
There is conflict in that because there is a common ideology between those hanging these signs and those that want to keep Confederate monuments.
And you know, Melissa, it's not unusual. Most folks noticed where we were last night at the One Jacks was formerly Hemming Park, named after a general who put up a Confederate monument that has pretty much been taken away, and it's got a brand new name. And there were people with signs saying, take down the Confederate monuments. And there were also 10 police officers, by my count, who were on the fringes keeping an eye on things. And it was a peaceful hour long. It ended with music and candles being lit.
Omar in Duval County. Hi, Omar. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have been concerned since Obama got elected. The numbers of these nationalist groups and hate groups have been increasing since then. So what's culminating now has been planned on for years to come, and I don't see it stopping, I'm sorry to say.
Thanks, Omar. Lynn on the South Side. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to thank you for covering this topic this morning. As far as the hate speech that was, kind of publicized in Jacksonville, it's unfortunate that the police weren't able to at least issue a citation for public nuisance or something, or make some kind of a statement that's a little more profound than an apology to them for taking their time. Flying a drone over the freeway, that should at least be able to be a misdemeanor ticket or something. And they could have potentially caused a traffic accident or something like that. But aside from that, I wanted to echo what so much of what's been shared today. It's really just the incitement of more intimidation, across the country, but in Jacksonville as well, whether it's, minority groups, whether it's religious groups, whether it's women or LGBTQ, it's just the idea that free speech entitles us to make other people feel threatened. And I think unfortunately it works in a lot of cases and people do feel very uncomfortable. And we just have to have our law enforcement, be a little bit more bold. Thanks for letting me share that.
Thank you, Lynn. Ben Becker, a listener, emails the show. He asks, is there any city or county ordinance regulating the hanging of signs or banners from a highway overpass for safety reasons? I don't believe there is, Ben. Now, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, this same neo-Nazi that was arrested in Poland was apologized to in Jacksonville. But it's my understanding that hanging those signs is perfectly legal, even if, as the caller said, they could disrupt traffic.
It would appear so, because if it was illegal, you would imagine they would have at least been cited. But then based on the interaction, who knows? There needs to be some steps looked at, some steps taken as relates to what an ordinance could do. They could try to come up with something. Then the question would be, would it pass constitutional muster, right? But there has to be something, I would imagine, from a safety perspective, whether it comes to hanging signs over a highway, projecting images onto private property, whereas you could come up with some sort of ordinance that would work. They could thread the needle and be able to have it pass that constitutional muster. And that's something that with city council, we have to see whether they would have the stomach for that. But based on the turnout last night at the event downtown, I'm not sure how much stomach they have for it or interest they would have in it.
You know, we should point out that a private corporate leader, David Miller of Brightway Insurance, has stepped up. He's donating $1 million to the Jewish Federation of Northeast Florida to lead education about why it's important to stand against hate speech and anti-Semitism. So we will have him on the show next week. Let's take another call on this and then we'll move on. It's a rabbi on the line, Rabbi Fish in Jacksonville. Hello, Rabbi Fish. Rabbi Fish, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking my call, Melissa, and thank you for covering this story. I just want to share that in our Jewish community, we're extremely disappointed with the JSO's handling of the situation. I had numerous conversations with law enforcement this week, and they keep on emphasizing how First Amendment has to be protected and how hate speech is a protected right. And that's not what I'm going to debate. But the deference and the almost honor that these, you know, I would say troublemakers were trying to cause is completely a different level and in our opinion, out of line. And I think it's a black eye for the JSO, quite frankly. I think it's a black eye for the city. And I would like the JSO leadership to address this because the police, the sheriff has not weighed in personally. And even though we've heard a lot from JSO about reporting things, but in our community, we feel discouraged to even report things when JSO officers are going to arrive and just thank the neo-Nazis and apologize to them. It's quite frankly an outrage.
Rabbi Fish, and can you let us know where is your temple, your congregation, just so we can get that information too?
It's on San Jose Boulevard in Mandarin.
Okay, thank you for that. And thanks to everyone who's holding to talk about this. It's certainly a hot topic, but we do need to move on and look at a few other news and notes from the week. It's our Friday roundtable, 549-2937. In a related story, I guess you could say, even as the city faces a lawsuit over Duval County's political lines, which plaintiffs say dilute black voting power in the city, a federal judge agreed with them. Here's what happened this week. Jacksonville's top lawyer told city council members they don't need to worry about whether the new districts are oddly shaped or even whether or not the lines comply with the landmark Voting Rights Act. A federal judge struck down the city's earlier maps as a racial gerrymander, saying that the city council districts and school board districts segregated voters by race, violating the U.S. Constitution. The city needs to pass the new maps pretty quickly, and they are struggling to do so. And this has been a mess all week. Dan Scanlon.
It was not only was it a mess, it was interesting that when I would look up from the one Jack's vigil last night, I could see some people coming to the front door of city council to look, some reporters. Mr. Gaffney came out at one point just to hang on the fringes and watch. He was the only politician I saw. It is a mess. And I mean, at one point this week, was it three neighborhoods off Riverside Avenue and that area were in three separate districts? I ponder myself, when I go vote, I have to drive past two precincts to get to my voting precinct. And that happened the last time around, whereas I used to vote right down the street from me. So I don't know what mishmash this is. I can tell you, as being the old guy in the room, or one of the old guys in the room, I covered redistricting hearings in the 80s.
You're a spring chicken.
And I will remember it was a mess. It was a total mess covering all of these things. I give Raymond Troncoso just all the props for having to watch and listen to this stuff, because looking at the tweets, I don't know if they know what they're doing. And I don't know if they're going to have an acceptable plan in by the 8th.
We will continue to follow it. But you know what, folks? You never know who's going to call into this program. You guys want to guess who's on the line, maybe?
Oh.
Anyone want to guess?
The mayor?
No, not the mayor. However, it is an elected official.
Council president?
Not the council president, although a lot of local officials do like to call in unprompted, and we always appreciate that. No, here's what's going on. There is an event happening in our studios today, in our building. It's called Save Our Sons. And this group is, of course, trying to stem the tide of gun violence and build up young men. And they invited gubernatorial candidate and Florida Congressman Charlie Crist to attend this event in Jacksonville at WJCT Public Media today. He is apparently on the way to us, and he's on the road, and he has decided to call into the show.
Oh.
Charlie Crist, good morning.
Melissa, good morning. How are you?
I'm really well, and I appreciate you calling. So it's good to get you on the air like this, unprompted, just a few days before the election. Let me ask you, Congressman, the polling shows you losing to Ron DeSantis. Early voting is underway. You're out there campaigning hard across the state. What's your response to the polls and to the conventional wisdom, really, that the governor is cruising to re-election?
Well, polls are kind of all over the place. I mean, we just got one a couple of days ago, has us beating Governor DeSantis by 8. It was 54 to 46. And really the breakdown comes on the women's issues, women's right to choose. And I'm for women's right to choose. He's against it, signed a bill against it, signed a bill that even has no exceptions for rape or incest, which is horrific. And I think that's making a huge difference. And that's why I think some polls are up, some polls may not be, but the only one poll matters now, and that's the one on November the 8th.
You have leaned hard into the issue of reproductive freedom in Florida. The state has limited the procedure to 15 weeks pregnancy. There are rumblings in Tallahassee that lawmakers and the governor may seek to further limit the procedure after the midterms. This is one of many issues voters are considering as they go to vote, economic issues being another big driver. And so what's your message to people who, you know, they haven't followed this closely? Maybe they're not particularly concerned about abortion rights and they're more concerned about inflation. What's your message to them?
Well, you know, we're at a unique place in Florida as it regards inflation. We're the most expensive state to live in America, rated by Forbes magazine. You know, that's more expensive than California, more than New York. And, you know, it's because our rising property insurance rates have gone through the roof. Utility bills have gone through the roof. DeSantis administration just doesn't regulate them. And whenever the utilities ask for a rate increase, they grant them readily. Has done nothing on property insurance, even though he could have in the regular session. He could have in a special session. Didn't do anything to lower rates for the people of Florida. Housing's a mess. You know, it's almost impossible to afford a new house in Florida or even rent an apartment. People have to work 2 and 3 jobs in order to be able to put food on the table and have a roof over their head. And that's just unconscionable. It's because the governor's taken his eye off the ball. He's pursuing the presidency early. Now, wouldn't even answer that question during our debate last week. And I think it's very, very clear that he is much more concerned about his own personal political ambition than the struggles that middle-class Floridians are having to deal with, and they're getting crushed.
It's 549-2937. Let me ask you, Congressman, when you talk to voters about a lot of these issues, they do express concern about them. But at the same time, some voters will say that they like the way the governor has run the state. And in particular, they will point to him keeping the schools open for the majority of the pandemic. What's your response to that?
Well, I wouldn't go patting myself on the back if I were Governor DeSantis about the pandemic. I mean, my word, we've lost over 82,000 Floridians. And if we have followed the protocols most states did, about 40,000 of those Floridians would still be alive. That's enough to fill Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg. And, you know, it's appalling to me. And I feel terrible for my fellow Floridians. All he had to do was follow science, not be political, not make it, you know, some game about trying to score political points for your presidential ambitions, but try to do what's right for the health, safety, and welfare of our fellow Floridians. And he didn't do it. And it's appalling, I think. And I think that's why Floridians deserve a choice. Somebody who actually does believe in choice for women. Somebody who does believe in freedom and your right to vote. And somebody who will fight for your civil rights and decency. That's what's on the line in this election, and our democracy is on the line.
These are all winning issues with Democrats and some independents. But let me ask you, Congressman Crist, for the first time in a long time, maybe... correct me if I'm wrong, Fred, maybe ever in the modern era, Republican voter registration in Florida has outpaced Democratic voter registration. Yes. The Florida Democratic Party has frankly failed to increase its ranks. More Latinos are responding to the Republican message. So what are your thoughts about the banner that you're now running under? You are a Democrat. You used to be a Republican. What about the Democratic Party's failures to organize and grow registrations here and message effectively in such a way that voters respond to these issues? Because voters, when they're polled, say they care deeply about all of the issues you're laying out, but yet they're turning to the right. What about that?
I don't know that they are turning to the right. Now, what we've seen in early voting gives an advantage to the Republicans, but it doesn't say who they're voting for. And as I told you in the poll I shared with you, you know, the breakdown among men and women, the gender crosstab, if you will, has DeSantis beating us among men 53-47, but us beating him among women with almost 58% of the women's vote. And it doesn't say if they're Democrat or Republican or independent. They're just women who care about their freedom and respect and their right to choose. I can tell you this, as a former governor who won as a Republican back in 2006, at that time, Democrats outnumbered Republicans by about 400,000 registration. And we still won. So the registration is interesting, something fun to talk about, but who they vote for is what matters the most. And none of us are going to know the answer to that question until the evening of November the 8th. And I'm excited about it. I'm optimistic about it. I think we're going to beat Ron DeSantis.
Now, you're up here on your way to Jacksonville, as I mentioned, to attend an event in our studios. I'd like to get your reaction to what we were discussing earlier in the show, the hate speech, the anti-Semitic speech that marred the Georgia-Florida weekend, and the rise of political extremism and hate groups in Florida.
It's awful, and it should be roundly condemned. I've already done so. Governor DeSantis has not. And he was at the game, at the stadium, where these epithets took place. The anti-Semitism is appalling. I can't believe that our governor would not have hard to announce, you know, Nazis and say that they ought to be denounced.
And a spokesperson for the governor did put out a statement touting his support for the Jewish community in Florida a couple of days later. But go ahead.
Well, back, the spokesperson isn't the governor. The governor hasn't said a word about it. And he should. And why isn't he? That's the question. Why won't he himself do that? That's what I find unbelievable. I really do.
You're coming to Jacksonville, as I said, Representative Crist, to attend an event in our studios. It's a group called Save Our Sons. Where else will you be this weekend in this part of this neck of the woods?
Sure. Well, that's a little after 11. Then around 12 o'clock, we are at the Jacksonville Community Leaders Get Out the Vote lunch in order to encourage those who haven't voted yet, haven't early voted, to make sure that they either do that until early voting stops, and if they don't make it then make sure they get out on November the 8th. After that, we're going to go to the Fresh Cut Fridays Barbershop. It's a drop-by for us. I look forward to it about 4 o'clock. And then around 5:30, we're going to be at Florida Out the Vote rally. It's all about getting out the vote, Melissa. That's what I'm focused on. And then 6 o'clock, Choose Freedom Fish Fry. Make sure we get out with some folks, have some good fish. We all love that in Florida. And then I'll end up this evening doing a CNN interview with Jake Tapper. So it's a big, busy day.
It sure sounds like it. Well, thank you for spending a few minutes of it with us. U.S. Representative, former governor, and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Charlie Crist decided to call us. So thanks for the call.
Thank you, Melissa. My pleasure. Go to Vol.
All right. Like I say, you never know who's going to call in, so you always need to listen. Who wants to react first to that? Dan.
Well, as the newest kid on the block here at WJCT News, it just shows what the reach and the power of this program. Last Friday, certainly we had a blockbuster with some sheriff's candidates discussion. And now, as he's coming here to this facility where Bishop Guns is holding his Operation SOS, is Charlie Crist calling in. And I think it's great. I'm sort of getting a little goosebumps just listening. That's Charlie Crist talking to us, talking to you. So I'm sorry, a little fanboy here on that one. Sorry.
Well, I have to say, whoever is running for office, Democrat, Republican, or independent, we always welcome them calling us and joining the conversation. And, you know, Claire Heddles, Charlie Crist is win or lose, and if certainly the polls indicate he will lose on Tuesday. He is going to campaign hard to the end, and of course, so is the governor.
Yeah, there's interesting reporting this week in Politico that the Democratic Governors Association spent just about $700,000 this election cycle on the Democratic governor's race. It gave $14 million to Florida in the past two governor's races. So I am curious from Congressman Crist if he feels like the larger Democratic Party has rallied behind him in the state as they have past Democratic governor's candidates. I think, you know, I mean, he sounds hopeful. He's definitely rallied behind this the abortion topic. Even during the debate a couple weeks ago, that was, he brought every question back to, almost every question back to women's reproductive rights. And I think he's really counting on that being a mobilizing issue for voters. But I think there is an important question about whether the Democrats really invested in this race to the point of winning.
Not only that race, Fred, but the one, the Senate race between sitting Senator Marco Rubio and his challenger, Val Demings.
It is clearly apparent that the, in terms of the congressional and the Senate race, that the Democrat Party has adopted almost a one-note Charlie approach. It's either going to be abortion rights, or it's going to be, in the case of Val Demings, they've tried to shore up her defund the police rights on her end. But the other part about it is that as we look, I won't say down ballot, as we look just here in our area, with the newly formed Congressional District 4, the Democratic Party has just written that off. LaShonda Holloway is in
It's been redrawn, so it's been gerrymandered.
Well, it has been gerrymandered, and that's one thing. And that's something that former Governor Crist is not even mentioned about the kind of activity that this governor has gotten into that has affected directly voting rights, equal rights, and people's lives. And to have candidate with not even an inch of television time, let's just put her on television once. Aaron Bean doesn't even have to mention that he has an opponent in his commercials now. He just talks and talks and spends all of the time, of course, berating President Biden. The Democratic Party's just got to do something, do better in Florida. Yes, they've been coming, Chris has benefited from national money and national fundraising, but the party here in Florida has not done the groundwork over the past 4 years and to get themselves together, and they're going to continue to lose voters, registered voters, if they don't do something and do something fast.
And Ben Becker, Action News Jax, you know, plenty of Republicans like this state of affairs, we need to point out. They like the way the state is being run. They like one-party control. People who have lived in states where Democrats run the table and have full control have lived the mirror image of this. I've had both experiences, living in a state where Democrats run everything and now living in a state where Republicans mostly run everything. One-party control on either side of the aisle breeds corruption, cronyism, groupthink, and ultimately poor governance. So there's an argument to be made that we need two strong parties so that each can serve as a check on the other. What about that?
I think you should run. That's what should happen.
Yeah, I would lose in a landslide, so that won't be happening. But go ahead. What do you think about that?
Well, in a landslide, right now, last time I saw, DeSantis has like a $100 million edge on Crist in fundraising, money on hand, okay? So Crist is getting blown out in that department, right? You need both sides of the aisle represented to have a government that's represented by everybody. But in this case of the governor's race, I mean, Crist has no shot in this election, okay? He's trailing in the polls. The fundraising isn't even close. We have 270,000, 300,000 more registered Republicans in Florida right now. So for all that Charlie Crist is saying and represents right now, I mean, I'd be shocked that Governor DeSantis doesn't win on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think that's a very accurate assessment of things. Of course, we're always glad to have the conversation with candidates of all stripes. And, you know, this points up the fact, whatever office you're running for, how hard it is to run for public office and how difficult it can be. And I applaud everyone who has the courage and commitment to do it, whatever their political persuasion.
Can I say one more thing on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one more thing. You know, Charlie Crist, for all his ideas, hasn't helped himself by flip-flopping back and forth during his career between being a Republican and a Democrat. So that's always the biggest knock on him. Where does he really stand? So at the end of the day, If he can't win this election, in some respects, he has to look at himself in the mirror, and because he hasn't been able to stay the course of what he believes in along the way. And that's, you know, that's part of the problem. You know, the voters want to know where you stand on issues, and if you're going constantly going back and forth on issues or what party you're going to belong to, that's not going to help.
Mike in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to say that as an independent voter, I am tired of the partisanship with the Republican Party and the narrative they push. Against abortion personally, but I absolutely would fight for the right for a woman's right to choose, because it is no man's right to choose for a woman. It's no politician's right to choose for a woman. I'm tired of DeSantis' political stunts. I'm fed up with it, and I voted completely Democrat, and I'm probably going to switch over to the Democratic Party. And while the Democratic Party definitely needs to work on its messaging, it's the better option right now.
Thanks for your opinion, Mike. And let's talk about one more race before we say goodbye. T.K. Waters, the Republican candidate for sheriff, leads Democratic opponent Lakeisha Burton by 5 points in a UNF poll. Of course, early in-person voting is underway, and Election Day is November 8th. That is one of several races on your ballot. So if you haven't voted yet, get out and vote. Make your voice heard. And there were lots of other stories we wanted to discuss, but we got a high-profile call-in. So I'm sorry, guys, we can't get to all of your other stories. But we do have time for a lightning round. Let's go around the horn and see what stories we might have missed this week. Yes, it's our lightning round. Dan Scanlon.
All right, I care. At Christ the King Church in Arlington on Monday, the last time that both sheriff's candidates are going to be together, and they're going to have some pointed questions for both of them. And I know Lakeisha Burton confirmed to me yesterday she will be there.
And you'll be hosting the show Monday to preview that.
Yep.
Fred Matthews.
I'm looking at the fun stuff. I'm heading to Springfield and get me a lawn chair and enjoying some of the Porch Fest this weekend. It's one of the nice things that happens in town. It's free, it's fun, and looks like the weather's going to hold up relatively well this weekend.
So we're going to have a representative from Porch Fest on in just a few minutes, yep. So I hope you enjoy it. It will be really nice. Claire Heddles.
Duval Schools tossed out its longstanding sex ed curriculum because of backlash from some conservative groups that took issue with the publisher. They've presented new curriculum. It's going up for a vote in December. We have the details on that at jackstoday.org.
And we have a little more time than I thought we had. This is important. This is a really important story. Can you give us just a little bit more detail?
Right. So we've had this longstanding curriculum from ETR, was a publisher. They're based in California, but the authors of the curriculum live all over the country. And we've had it for at least 10 years. Proponents say that we've seen improved teen health outcomes in the time that we've had it in Duval schools.
Mm-hmm.
But some conservative parent groups have taken issue with it for their outspoken support of LGBTQ students, the publishers, and some other points in the curriculum. So Duval schools, after hearing this backlash from these conservative parent groups, threw it out in September. There is no comprehensive sex ed in Duval schools at all right now. There's new proposed curriculum that they're voting on in December. So Duval schools this week published all of that curriculum on their website for parents to review ahead of the vote.
You report critics of this plan think throwing out the former curriculum could undo a lot of progress in decreasing the rates of kids who are sexually active.
Exactly. The people that I've talked to that are, you know, I talked to a professor at UNF who helped train teachers in the program, and she was saying that we have data that shows it has been working, it's effective, it's decreased adolescent sexual assault. A lot of the data that the school district has been collecting, that they will soon stop collecting, but in the youth risk behavior survey, she says, can be tied to the curriculum that they've had, and it's a loss, she says, to lose this curriculum.
All right. Thank you.
Just a quick question. Any indication as to when this sex ed will start? Is it going to start in middle school or high school?
So there are lessons for both middle school and high school, and there's puberty lessons starting in fifth grade.
Really?
So they're proving curriculum for puberty lessons in fifth grade, and then it's reproductive health education in middle school, and then sex education.
Check out Claire's work on this at jackstoday.org. And before we say goodbye, Ben Becker, what's on your mind?
I'm looking to see if the Jags can get off the schneid and break their losing streak at fill-in-the-blank field.
Yes, yes. Well, I know.
Don't put your money the other way.
Their favorite.
Put your money. That's what I know. Put your money the other way. Put your money the other way.
Again.
Oh, man. It's, yeah. Okay. Well, I want to thank you all, and let me talk quickly about the Florida Roundup live today at noon across the state. We'll look at concerns around the state about voter intimidation, why the state is trending more conservative, and Claire will join us with a look at why you need to study the judicial races on your ballot. Plus, Saturday at 4 p.m., What's Health Got to Do with It? Looks at healthcare on the road with Mayo Clinic host Dr. Joe Servin. Thank you so much, Dan Scanlon, Fred Matthews, Claire Heddles, and Ben Becker. Have a great weekend, and thanks for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
My pleasure.
And in a moment, we'll preview one of the city's best parties of the year, Porch Fest. That's next.
This week on Science Friday, the epic travels of the Voyager spacecraft.
It's now in the space between the stars. It's really on a new journey.
Plus a stellar tell-all from our own galaxy.
The Milky Way is your sassiest friend. Not a Beyoncé, not a Lady Gaga, but someone with that definite queen energy.
It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
President Biden says this is a defining moment for our democracy.
You can't love your country only when you win.
New polling shows even solid blue House seats are trending purple. The Fed hikes interest rates again, and the Astros make history in Philadelphia. More on the Roundup next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, it's one of the city's best parties all year round. Historic Springfield becomes one big outdoor concert and street party tomorrow, Saturday, as they host Porch Fest. Kelly Rich is executive director at the Spar Council. She's getting ready for the big bash, and she's on the line. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So you're in the midst of preparations. Tell us about this year's Porch Fest.
Yes. Well, first thing I want to point out is I am standing in the sunshine right now. Let's talk about that as opposed to what we were dealing with last year. So we are really excited to be able to offer the 8th annual Jacksonville Porch Fest in historic Springfield. Of course, we had to cancel in 2020. Last year, we had the nor'easter that made us do a little miniature version and postpone on Sunday. But this year is our year. We are really excited to be able to offer it on the east side of Main Street from noon until 8. And something else to talk about is it's free and open to the public.
I know, which is so wonderful. Now, this is, for people who've never been, an opportunity to walk all around in the city streets of Springfield. They're closed to traffic. You can bring your beverage of choice with you, which is always nice. And, of course, the big draw is the live music on all of the porches. Who's going to be playing?
Yeah, we're really excited to showcase our neighborhood. So we have 25 different performances, and the majority of them are Jacksonville local. And so from noon until 8 p.m. that evening, we'll be having at any given point, 3 to 5 porches performing at any given point. So from one block to another, you'll be able to walk around and listen to multiple different genres and enjoy the day. It's very family friendly, dog friendly, a lot of vendors and food. And it's really, honestly, I think one of the most unique events in Jacksonville. And we're really proud to be able to host it in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, where else can you experience something like this? And for people who've never been to Springfield, the historic homes with their beautiful big porches just are a perfect backdrop, aren't they?
I agree. I don't think it could be duplicated anywhere else in the city. Obviously, I'm biased, but I think our neighborhood is the most beautiful. But underneath the historic tree canopy, the big, open, wide historic porches, yeah, we're really expecting a good time. And so that it is, it's called Porch Fest for a reason. So we'll have 19 different porches opening up and having the music on there, and everybody can come and enjoy the day. And yeah, bring your walking shoes for sure. And
yeah,
then we also tell people to bring maybe a folding chair or a blanket, because there will be music in Sesquicentennial Park as well.
Now, yeah, tell us about that, because our own Heather Schatz and our own Shelton Hall of the Jacksonville Music Experience, they will be helping kick things off at the Sesquicentennial Park stage.
Correct. Yes. We're excited to bring that in and have that wonderful new partnership. And so, yeah, they'll be kind of taking ownership of that stage, with which will have three performances on throughout the day, but especially our headliner from 6 to 8 p.m., which is Zach Person, flying in from Austin. I've been told he is like a younger version of Lenny Kravitz. So I'm really excited to be able to hear him play.
Now, Saturday night, will Clutho Park be a big concert and party, is traditionally what
we... No, we're not utilizing Clutho Park. That's why we're trying to highlight all of the neighborhood. And so, and then at that last shift of performances from 6 to 8, we'll actually have not only the performance in Sesquicentennial Park, but two other porches as well. We're trying to split the crowd up and be able to enjoy it and not have the big mass so dependent upon Clutho Park. And like I said, we wanted to highlight the east side of our neighborhood this year. But we do have plans to go back to Clutho Park, especially in 2024, which is going to be our big 10-year celebration.
But this year, it's all about the east side. Go east side.
Yeah,
as someone who lives on the east side of Springfield myself, what will the west side be the spot next year?
We're still contemplating exact placement, but we'd love to be able to pick up this footprint and highlight all of our different quadrants. So, I mean, there's even talk about maybe going a little northward. So we're really excited to be able to offer that. And like I said, it helps keep the festival new each year. So that way you're not looking at the same stages or the same porches. And like I said, we want to highlight the entirety of the neighborhood.
Now, for people, Kelly, who've never maybe come downtown, never been to Springfield, what tips do you have for them about parking and getting around?
Oh, the best thing to tell people is to go park at the FSCJ downtown campus. They have a multitude of open parking available there for us. And that, and then there's a shuttle running continuously from the parking lot area to the front of the festival at Sesquicentennial Park. So that way you don't have to worry about driving around or, you know, having to do too much walking to get to the festival. So that's probably my best suggestion. The shuttles will be running continuously. They are dog friendly. Like I said, there's placement for strollers and all of that. So,
and of course, all of the Main Street, all of the Main Street bars, restaurants and businesses will be open to the crowds.
Oh, yes, very much so. They're even staying open late. They want everyone to stay, even though we end at 8. They're going to have their doors open and ready to continue the party.
So, folks, if you've never been, I promise you, you need to check this out. Saturday, 8th Annual Porch Fest in historic Springfield. Getting underway around noon, Kelly, right?
Starting right off at noon.
Noon.
So come on, spend the day.
Come spend the day in Springfield. Enjoy live music on dozens of beautiful historic porches. Mingle and mix through the streets of the neighborhood. Traffic will be closed. It's really fun and it's really special. And Kelly Rich, Executive Director of SPAR Council, that's Springfield Preservation and Revitalization. I know you're so busy. So thank you for stopping by and have fun.
Thank you much. We'll see everybody tomorrow.
And we'll close with LPT. They'll be performing at Porch Fest. Enjoy the music. I'm Melissa Ross. I'll be back today at noon with my co-host Matthew Petty for the Florida Roundup. That's our live statewide call-in program rounding up the biggest stories across the state. So come back to me at noon for that and have a great Friday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.